I mean, I just always knew God was there. I guess through all of this, my mother's faith is very strong. Her faith not shaking and her consistency of this church is our family. We're not going to not go. You know, we're always going to go and we're always going to be involved. So I guess that was a good example for me.
Thank you for listening to the Collective Church Podcast. Collective is a church for the rest of us, which means if you've never been to church, walked away from the church, or are struggling to find a church you connect with, you belong here. On the first Thursday of every month in 2024, we are sharing a special episode of our Your Story Matters podcast series. This is an opportunity for people from Collective to be real about their brokenness and what God has done and is doing in their lives. These stories will be real and raw and vulnerable, and we hope they encourage and inspire you in your own faith to share your story. To watch the sermons from the Your Story Matters series or to find out more, you can head to www.mycollective.church/YSM. Now check out these stories. Thank you for listening to the Your Story Matters podcast. This is a podcast where people from Collective Church in Frederick, Maryland share their stories. And we've been on this journey for about a year and a half of people sitting in our podcast room and choosing vulnerability and talking about the highs and lows of life, what God has done, how they've seen God move, how they've seen God in the lows and in the highs. And we're on season two of this podcast, which means there's a whole bunch of episodes, if you're picking this up for the first time, that you have not listened to. So I want to encourage you, definitely listen to Andy and Laura's story. But when you're done, jump back, listen to the rest of the episodes from season two, and then invest in season one. We did an episode a week in season one. We're doing one a month right now. But I can promise you that this is worth your time, and it is worth the 75 minutes that you spend listening to someone share vulnerably, with sincerity and this, truth about, how good God is, even in the good and the bad of life. And so I just encourage you to check those out. But for today, I encourage you to lean in and listen to this story. And so, Andy, Laura, thank you so much for sharing your story with us today. It's exciting. This drops right after Easter, and so there's a lot of people who will get to hear this right after a really big day for us. And I think this will, help people understand a little bit more about who Collective is, but more importantly, who Jesus is and what he can do. And so I'm excited for that. And so, Andy, we're going to start with you. First question we always start with, which is tell us a little bit about your childhood. Where did you grow up? Family, what was that like? And then the faith question, was there faith in your childhood? And what was that experience like?
I was born in California. I grew up in Iowa. Had mom moved us back there when I was about 6 weeks old. So all of my growing up was there. Had two sisters, and we just had a pretty normal childhood. As far as bad things,
sure.
We lived in a rural area that was, I got to spend a lot of time outside farms and all that stuff. So,
you mentioned your mom moved you back there. Was there family or was it, because California to Iowa was that to get closer to family or was that just we just got to get out of California and here's this cool spot in the middle of America?
So my mom and my dad were married young, moved to California for, I don't know why.
Yeah.
And they both had grown up in Iowa. When I was born, he decided he didn't want that. So she's like, I got to move back to family, and that's how she ended up back there with her folks.
Yeah.
And started our life there.
Yeah. You said you have two siblings. Are they older? So are you the youngest?
They're both a couple years, a couple years younger than I am.
Okay.
I am.
Wow.
And then Ainsley's 4 or so.
You move out there, so your mom kind of moves you at first to be by family. You begin to grow up there. At some point, she meets another person, right? And so how old were you when she met, I'm going to get new husband or new significant other. So how old were you when that happened?
About 6 months from what I understand the
okay.
story.
Okay.
And he was dad
yeah.
for ever.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
So growing up, always had the mom and the dad,
yep.
Two sisters. We started out in a little tiny house on one side of town, moved into a split level, new neighborhood. So they were, you know, up and coming. He was in banking, and mom did various things. She sold Mary Kay for the longest yeah. time. So there was always activity.
Yeah.
We lived in town. A lot of friends lived on farms.
Yeah.
My grandfather was a huge part of my upbringing, and just spent hours and hours and with him.
Yeah. Because it's easy to like hear the beginning of your story and be like, oh, your dad peaced out, and therefore, like, there's this void. But like you said, you know, your stepdad and your grandfather both being present were a big part of your life. And so a lot of people misunderstand that, like, hey, your biological father was out, therefore you don't have that male in your life. But, you know, would you say that you had that through your stepdad and your grandfather, like
Absolutely.
A strong male presence? Yeah.
Yeah. Good, bad, or indifferent, they were always there.
Sure.
They were the ones that, you know, influenced what I do today.
Yeah.
So
I'd specifically tell the men listening, hey, like, you should be strong men to people who don't have strong men. Mm-hmm. Right. Cause that's
Absolutely.
Really what a big part of that is. It's not, that, you didn't have a dad. Therefore, like, all these things come up in your life, which I'm sure they do at some point, but like, you still had strong men in your life, which helped you become a strong man. And a lot of times you think it has to be the biological father. It just has to be a strong man. So with Iowa, was faith involved? Like, people have misunderstandings of different parts of America where sometimes people are like, I grew up in Florida. And it's like, oh, you've loved Jesus since day one, you know? But then if someone says, I grew up in California, it'd be like, heathen. You know, we just have these misunderstandings about the way faith and church exists kind of in these different pockets of America.
Mm-hmm.
Midwest has, it's people would say sometimes it's Bible Belt-ish,
yeah.
but you get to a point in the Midwest where it's like, is it? So for you, was there church, was there faith, belief in God, any of those things?
There was. I grew up Methodist. We were going to church, not every Sunday, but it wasn't an irregular thing to do.
Sure, sure.
It wasn't like, oh, what do you mean we gotta go?
yeah.
You know, it was, we knew we were going.
Yeah.
We were certainly there on the big, you know, Christmas and
yep.
Easter. And
yep.
We had our pew that the family sat
yeah.
in.
Yeah.
Eventually, I think it migrated up to the balcony.
Further away.
A little further away. Went through all the classes.
Yep.
Confirmation course there, was baptized as an infant,
yep.
Did all that stuff, was an usher, which I thought was great because when you're an usher, you get to go downstairs and have donuts during the service. So that was, that faith was always there. It wasn't necessarily this is our lifestyle,
yeah.
but we had the faith. We knew right from wrong. We were good people.
Yep.
You know, we're going to help others.
Sure.
You know, all that. It was always there.
Good.
Yeah. There wasn't an epiphany. Later on in life, like, oh,
sure.
I need to get into this thing.
Yeah.
There certainly was now I need to make it my own.
Yeah. There are people who grew up in denominations, and it's kind of twofold. There's some people who are like, I just did the things they told me to do, and it meant nothing. And then you'll have some people who get older, and they're like, hey, I don't agree with how they did it, or like when I read scripture, there's a little bit of tension, but it did teach me that faith matters. It taught me that God is real. It taught me how to serve. It taught me that community was important, like these really beautiful core pieces to it that as you get a little bit older, you're like, oh, I want to do this a little bit differently. And so for you, it's kind of that way where you'd say, hey, we didn't go every single Sunday, but we were involved and it mattered. And it wasn't we go to church on Sunday and then Sunday night, our life is just completely different than the things that we were experiencing in our faith. So I don't know your story. So at some point you end up in Maryland, but was Iowa like it was elementary, middle school, and high school? So did you guys meet in Iowa?
We did. Yeah. We met in high school.
Yeah, in Iowa.
In Iowa.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. After high school, my first year of college was I studied physical education for the handicap, and then I got a summer job working at a landscape company. I think I kind of like this.
Yeah.
And then got into a two-year college for horticulture.
Oh, cool.
Went to a couple job fairs. One of them brought me out here to interview with a couple companies. She'll tell you I got back off the plane and said, I'm moving to Maryland if you still want to make this thing happen.
Oh, my gosh.
This is where I'm going to be.
That's exactly what you said.
What was it about Maryland that was like, yeah, I want to go pursue this, especially when you're in a relationship in Iowa?
You and myself probably, but you didn't necessarily want to stay in Iowa all our lives. And so if we didn't get out at the start, then we would put down roots
and all that.
And yeah. Then we would never move on.
So I came out and looked at two different jobs. One was a nursery, one was a landscape company.
Wow.
Chose to go with the nursery job, and it was really good. It was a very good company and good transition into married life because she did follow me.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
I did.
Spoiler alert.
Yeah.
All right. So you end up in Maryland, but let's jump back. Laura, same question though, where you grew up, mm-hmm. what your family dynamic was like, childhood, all that. Faith, uh-huh. and kind of get us to the point where Andy's like, hey, I am going to Maryland. Yeah. Do you want to come with me?
Yeah. Well, I was born in Pennsylvania. My parents were college. My dad was a grad student. And so he was at Penn State. And then he went to Florida State. So we lived in Tallahassee and moved away from there when I was 5. So I do have some memories of, you know, going to the beaches, yep. and all of that, but the bulk of my childhood was in Iowa.
Okay.
My dad at that point became the director of the computer center at the University of Iowa.
Okay, yep.
And my mom was still working on her undergrad. I'm number 3 of 4
okay.
children, so she was going to school and working off and on part-time jobs, but mostly home with us. And dad was working briefcase, business suits,
yeah.
you know, all of that kind of,
yep.
that was, you know, I felt he was 10 feet tall and just the most amazing, strongest man in the world. The faith was very integral in in my childhood. Both my grandparents, are Church of Christ. They're yep. from Tennessee.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
So my parents grew up in Tennessee, married. My mom was 17, graduated one Saturday and got married the next.
Wow.
and started a family, you know, within the first year and a half.
Wow.
with my oldest brother. So, but we were pretty strict Church of Christ. We were there every Sunday morning, every Sunday night, every Wednesday night.
Yep.
My dad was an elder and he frequently preached.
Wow.
So I was always like, that's my dad.
Yeah.
So cool. But my dad was also bipolar.
Okay.
And an alcoholic.
Wow.
Hidden for the longest time from the church, and would frequently, he might miss Sunday night because he might be feeling sick.
Sure.
Because he was probably already drinking at that point. The church was definitely our family. And eventually it became too hard, I guess, to hide all of that.
Yeah.
My dad could be violent to her, not to us kids, but he did do terrible things to my mother because they would fight a lot in front of us, and then it would be like, kids, go downstairs.
Sure. Yep.
And one time it was just me and my little brother at home, and the fighting was starting, and we were told, go downstairs. And then as we were going down, my mom screamed, go get help, go get help. So we ran out the back door, and we could hear her screaming upstairs, and we ran to our neighbors, and I'm like, my dad's killing my mom. You know, please come. And of course the neighbor's like, oh, what is Bob doing now?
Sure.
You know, because, you know, they were kind of drinking buddies. So, yeah, he did. He tried to shoot her, but the gun jammed.
Wow.
And he hit her instead with the gun and gashed her head pretty good. But that became their first separation. They worked on it to get back together and did for a while. But there were still other times where the violence was threatening. He came in one time. He had been working on his car, changing spark plugs or something, and he couldn't find his vodka. He thought one of us, or mom, or my older brother had hidden it. So he got all of us lined up and was demanding to know where was his bottle. And I can remember him holding a hammer right above my brother's nose and saying, give me my bottle or I'm going to break his nose.
Wow.
He didn't, thankfully. And he stormed out and left. And then, so she got us out of the house and we went to a hotel just to get away in case he came back. And then the next morning, we all came back and he's got us soaking wet beach towels and said, these are his tears. He'd been crying. He can't lose his family. Please forgive me.
Sure.
You know, so those kinds of things happened a lot.
Yeah.
There were times where we would go to church Wednesday night and we would end up, us kids, each going to some other home, like members of the church, because at this point then everybody knows this is going on. And we got kind of farmed out to other church members' homes for the night. I loved my dad. I felt like I was his, you know, I was a daddy's girl. He used to say, you know, you're my girl, right? So I always knew I was his girl. But then all this other hand, he was very terrifying as well. Their divorce was final in April of 1981 on the 1st. And on April 12th of 1981, he died in a car accident.
Wow.
He had, and I was 13.
Okay.
He had been to a bar and apparently got into a fight with somebody else over a woman. And was going to go home and get his guns to finish the score. Thankfully, I guess, he hit a bridge.
Wow, wow.
And he was killed instantly. Without the church, I don't know how my mother could have done it with us or how we would have held together.
Yeah. It was known that he was bipolar. Like, you guys...
Yes, eventually, yes.
Yeah, was there... We're struggling to get people to think therapy is okay now.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Obviously, people have struggled with bipolar for decades.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
But 80s, 90s, it's a very different place. Was he on medication?
Sometimes.
Yeah, okay.
You know, he spent time a couple times in a psychiatric hospital. I know he underwent electric shock.
Wow.
I know he was on lithium. He would take it and then think he was cured, or he would drink heavily.
That's the which on lithium you're you can't do those things.
And you have to be compliant, and I don't know about any kind of really good therapy.
Sure.
Like,
I mean, it's just
right
a different
now.
Yeah, it's a different time. Bipolar is still very complicated and tricky, and they're learning there's different types of bipolar. But the reason why I ask is because it's easy for people to hear stories of abuse and immediately jump to a conclusion of, well, she should have just left the first time.
Yeah.
And but it's hard when, not when mental illness is involved, but when you think they're doing the things they need to do to not struggle with mental illness anymore.
Right.
It's like drinking. And I have this conversation all the time with guys in recovery. you know, alcoholism is a symptom of something else. And just quitting drinking doesn't solve the problem. It stops the drinking side of things, but it doesn't get to the root of like what's truly going on. And so, you know, in order for your dad to really like get all this stuff out, there's so many layers to it of quit drinking, dig deep into your soul, figure out why you're drinking, stay on your medicine and all that. And I imagine for you guys, like he's your dad, so you're rooting for that and you want to see that even though life is deteriorating with him.
Yeah.
And it's a hard place to be as family.
Yeah. And I will add to that, as when I became a mother, I looked back at my mother and I, for a while I had resentment towards her for why would she leave us in that situation? Mm-hmm. And why would she reunite with my dad after she was finally able, you know, they separated once.
Yep.
Because I thought I would never leave my children in that home life. It was so turbulent. It was so hard. But I think part of it is especially a lot of the thinking of the church that she grew up in and even that we grew up in was you do not divorce for any reason.
Yeah.
And he certainly had plenty of infidelity to go along with everything else.
Sure.
So that, I mean, if you were looking for that, you know, reason. But I know now, years later, she was doing the best she could with what she knew and with what support she had.
Yeah. You just don't know. You said, like, after this happened, you can't get through what you went through without the church.
Right.
But there is often this fear that we have that if, specifically with Doris, if we get divorced, therefore I will not have this anymore. And that is like, you know, and that church would have been different. Yeah. It proved that it was different. But that is a culture that people have felt in the church for a long time. You know, I have friends and family whose parents or they themselves have been excommunicated from churches because a divorce happened in an abusive relationship.
Yes.
Even today in 2024, that fear still sticks in the back of people's mind of like, if I get out of this marriage that is awful, toxic, abusive, it hurts me, it hurts everyone else here, it's not godly, there's no any of those things, will this church still love me?
Right.
And what's sad is like, I would hope churches would be like, yeah, we're going to, and we'll love both and we'll figure out how to how to do all that.
Mm-hmm.
But like that fear is real. And sadly, I don't know if it'll ever completely go away from the church.
Right.
But, you know, you're a teenager when this happens and the church steps up in a really big way. So for you, how did that impact your faith?
Mm-hmm.
Like, do you feel like it rattled it or did seeing the church step up strengthen it?
Yeah, it definitely did not rattle. In fact, well, becoming a baptized Christian, I to really proclaim my faith.
Yeah.
I was waiting actually for my dad to get better because that was the cycle I was seeing.
Sure.
Really bad times and then really good times and bad times and good times. And I wanted my dad to baptize me.
Yeah.
And we were in a bad time. And so I was waiting. I just knew that good time was going to come around again. And then I was going to ask dad to baptize me.
Yeah.
I mean, I just always knew God was there, you know? Yeah. I always knew God was there. Jesus loves me. There was never any room for doubt. I mean, I guess through all of this, my mother's faith is very strong.
Yeah.
Her faith not shaking and her consistency of this church is our family. We're still going, we're not going to not go, you know, we're always going to go and we're always going to be involved. So I guess that was a good example for me. It didn't shake my faith. So he did die in April. I was at a church camp in July of that year. And my brother was there. My older brother was there as the athletic director.
Oh, cool.
So I asked him to baptize me
while I was at that camp.
So I got baptized on July 1st of 81
in
Lake Darling.
Okay.
And,
that's awesome.
And I guess it deepened my reliance.
Sure.
And I always knew that God was my father. The only thing I would say that it did kind of, I guess I struggled with, and then as an adult I've come to peace with, because there may have been a little bit more of a legalistic point of view of God.
Sure.
Still at that point. I guess at that time I was like, oh, I really hope when I get to heaven my dad is there, but I'm not sure he's going to be there. And and I had to do all that, like, well, I guess I won't miss him because heaven will be so perfect.
Sure.
I won't even, know. I mean, so, you know, that's kind of like the childlike understanding of all of that.
Yeah.
Instead of trusting that God loves my dad and sees him through the filter that he sees all of us through.
Jesus talks about, like, it's a narrow gate, right? Like, it's just it's a narrow path. But then there's also this reality of, we try to explain grace in a way that's, like, extravagant and, you know, we'll endless second chance, all that stuff we say here. That's our understanding of grace. So it has to fall short of what God's grace looks like, right? Because if we can describe it in this, like, incredible way, it still fails to actually portray what grace truly is. And so, you know, that's a hard place to be, but you just hope, like, that grace truly is grace, right? And for people who've put their faith and believe, grace truly is grace, you know, in spite of our flaws and our sins, but even mental illness and like all those things that come with it, you know, and it's tricky. People ask me all the time, do you think, I'm like, I'm not playing that game. Mm-mm. Like, I'm not God,
you know, not my place.
Like, not it, right. But I do think grace and forgiveness are so much bigger than even our best explanation of it. Okay. So did you guys know each other at this point?
No.
Okay.
No. Yeah. That was junior high. My mother actually remarried. Yeah, ended up being great. He loved me. So life was pretty normal then at that point.
Yeah.
Home again and, you know, moved on to high school. I always knew who Andy Hogan was. I always knew who Andy was because he was a jock. And he DJ'd the school dances. And
I love that.
That was
so
many years ago.
I love that so much. So,
that was cassette tapes.
I love it. That was so good.
And records.
Albums. Oh, man, that's so good.
So I always knew who Andy was, but I would go to school with people for, like, years, and they'd be like, hey, are you new in school? I'm like, no, I've been sitting behind you in class for 10 years, you know? So I was kind of more the wallflower.
So how did you guys end up meeting then?
Somehow I got into chorus. I think it was mainly my low voice was in that for a while, and typical chorus room, stadium kind of seating.
Yeah.
Our high school, in that room, the windows were up way up on the top.
Yep.
And I happened to turn around, and there was this beam of light. I'm not kidding you, coming down. So I nudged the guy who was next to me. I'm like, who is that? And that's kind of how that all began.
Holy cow.
And,
you were a senior at that point?
Yeah.
Or?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. He's a senior. I was a junior. A friend of mine, we could go off campus for lunch. And she goes, hey, Andy, you want to come to lunch with us? And I'm like.
She was mortified.
Yeah.
Couldn't believe it. So, and then the next night, or that same evening, that was a Friday. And then that night was a school dance. And
this is a movie.
And he asked me to dance
from the stage, from what I can remember. But.
And then we went out to Godfather's Pizza after that night, and that was it.
Oh,
that
my
was
goodness.
The rest is history. It was December 2nd, 1983.
Okay, so you guys start dating in high school, which, and Andy, you've shared that, like, then you went east for at least a little while to go to college. You were still in high school at the time.
Yeah.
So you guys did
my senior year.
You did the long distance thing?
Well, and they came home, like, maybe not
it
every
was
weekend.
45
but
minutes to an hour.
Okay.
Yeah,
it wasn't
very far. Yeah, he came home frequently on the weekends.
When you were dating, did you guys feel like, oh, yeah, we're going to get married? Like, did you feel that way, or did it just feel like a high? I mean, it's a different time. Like,
I knew. I'm telling you, when I saw the beam of light, it was like, this is who it's going to be.
Yeah.
I don't know how to describe that,
within,
but that's just the way it was.
Within a couple of weeks, I would say, now, from what we knew, right? Because we were in high school, we were kids. I think our commitment and expectation pretty early on was, you know, this is for life.
Yeah. With what you guys have both experienced when it comes to a father who's not interested and a father who is abusive, you meet somebody and you're like, oh man, like, he's loving and he's kind and he's consistent. And Andy's like, and if I'm going to be in this, I'm going to be in this. Like, there's parts of, you might not be able to like say, my childhood and what I've been through has made this different than what it should be as 17 and 18 year olds. But like, that's essentially what it is. We're going, or at least what you feel is he is not your father and you are not your father, you know, and you are not like, and so it kind of makes it serious.
Yes.
Right. When you choose not to be.
I think we were both a little bit older than our chronological age because of the things we had gone through, and to kind of tell a little bit of his dad who raised him did he was a bit distant, let's just say that. So he was there and they did the family things, but he was a little bit emotionally stunted.
Sure.
So that, you know, so yeah, there was sort of the, I don't want to be like this. I'm going to be, you know.
Yep. So when you guys started dating and like you kind of have a few years of that, of, you know, school, but then he's back when you're in high school, before the 2-year technical school, talk about kind of the faith mesh, because, you know, growing up, I think you said Methodist, right? Mm-hmm. In Church of Christ, very, very, very different. Methodist, for people, like, just to put a little bit of context to it, it's like a little bit closer to the Catholic when it comes to like tradition. Church of Christ is teaches similar things to collective, but without any of the fun. But like, they're just two very different things.
Yes.
And even if they do, you know, say there was a Sunday in your church, Andy, where you did communion, it just has a different emphasis than what Laura's doing every single week, you know, when it comes to communion or who's presenting and all that.
Yep.
So was there any sort of like clash of that? I mean, you're young enough to where it's like, you're rooted way more than he is when it comes to, like, the tradition side. But what was that like through those like few years?
It was important to me while we were dating that, because at that point I would say his family, especially once he went off to his first year of school, that's when his parents' marriage did fall apart.
Okay.
And leading up to that, I would say their church attendance became just holidays and things like that. So I wasn't seen in that a lot of regular, you know, yes, faith is still there. They, you know, they still believe in God and that, but it wasn't a part of their daily lives.
Yep.
Like it was my family's and what I, so that was important to me that he.
Yeah, we had those discussions and it was, you know, like you. I mean, she invited me, come with me.
So most Sundays he did. I mean,
you know, there were just some questions, like you know, what are you doing?
Sure.
And I don't know that my family and I ever got into some deep conversations about it. It's just like, hey, this is what I'm doing. I like this girl. I kind of want to see, you know, where she is and what she's doing, she's about.
Yeah, a lot of times it would be like you would do your family thing Sunday morning, you know, maybe it was breakfast with the grandparents or whatever, but Sunday night was always a time that, you know, you could break away. And that maybe didn't help the initial relationship with me, and who is now my mother-in-law.
Yeah,
Because of a little bit of that. I mean, but... you know, we've worked through all that now, but that's, you know, a little bit of, but you're taking him from our family time.
Sure.
You know.
Sure. Because when they went to church, it was family time.
Right.
You know, just as
much
as it was faith time.
Right. Exactly.
And kind of similar for you, but it was saying, hey, like, this is just like 3 times the amount, right? Because you're doing the, even more so than that.
Yeah. Okay. So being in a university town, we had our main pulpit preacher, and we would have campus ministers on staff as well, who, you know, would do Bible studies and stuff and gear more towards the college age.
Smart.
And one of the campus ministers, I believe, asked you to study.
Yeah, because they knew that I hadn't been baptized on my own.
Yep.
So it was, you know, you may want to kind of look at this, and it was good. I remember. Mm-hmm. I think I went over to the house a couple times, you know, we'd just meet and, you know, he'd give me things to read and we'd talk and, you know, of course that made more questions from Mom, like, you've already done this, you know, and I'm like, yeah, but have I?
Yeah.
You know, and I mean, yes, I did. I absolutely did.
Yeah.
but now it's
now it's your choice.
It's mine.
Yeah. Right.
So I think it was like 19 or so I got baptized.
Cool.
I think that strengthened our relationship. She kind of knew that I was in.
All in.
And here we are.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and I mean, I think that's, I will say that is really important because, you know, you guys know there's a lot of young couples at Collective where their faith is not similar, mm-hmm. and it is more dissimilar than it is similar. And like Collective is the similarity that they share, mm-hmm. but they've never kind of dug into the, hey, you did this one thing and I did this one thing, but we're raising kids at some point. Mm-hmm. What the heck, mm-hmm. you know, and all that. And so, you know, it is important that couples, specifically ones that know, hey, we want to get married, like, hey, let's be aligned on this stuff, mm-hmm. and let's wrestle and do the hard things and have the hard conversations and deal with the mothers-in-law who are like, mm-hmm. wait a second, hold on, mm-hmm. you know,
yeah.
why this, and this.
Right.
And, you know, this is also today, now we have a little bit more capability of like just Googling things to learn more about church history, which mm-hmm. helps us figure out why did we do these things this way. But it's a good foundational piece that you guys set, whether or not you ended up together. But the good news is you end up together.
Mm-hmm.
So he comes back from Maryland.
Yeah. So he went on that job. He did, just like you said, he went on to that job fair, came out to Maryland, got off the plane. First thing he says, well, I'm moving to Maryland.
Yeah.
And if you still want to marry me, you can move to Maryland too.
Yeah.
So I had to get a map out. I mean, I knew kind of.
Because you lived in Pennsylvania for a little bit, even though you were.
I was
a baby. But like.
Yeah. But I didn't really. I had to place it where along the
yeah.
East Coast it was. And I told my mom, and she said, oh, honey, you would move to the moon with him, wouldn't you? And I said, I would.
Yeah.
So if that's where we were going, that's where we're going. So he moved out first and then came back, and we got married in June of 87.
Wow.
And got married on a Saturday, went to church on Sunday,
yeah,
got on
go.
The plane on Monday,
go.
And he went back to work on Wednesday.
Wow.
I mean, that's how that.
Where in Maryland did you guys end up?
Germantown. And we lived there for 2 years. I know I was like, this is not like Iowa.
Yeah.
The neighbors don't talk to each other. We lived in apartments, you know, and you don't really speak
yeah.
and you don't bond. And at that point, then we also weren't really going to church.
I was
going to
ask, yeah, because there's not a lot. Church of Christ specifically.
We went to Rockville Church of Christ.
Okay, yeah.
And that was kind of an interesting and discouraging experience. At that point, it wasn't doing very well. I don't know the health of it now, but many of the pews were roped off just so that the church people would sit closer together.
Yeah.
So we went there a couple of times.
Yeah.
And then we kind of didn't go to church.
Kind of fizzled out.
Yeah. Then I was also, so we didn't have church community. We didn't have, you know, where we live community. He had work community. I had work community, but, you know, bells didn't mash super well. After a couple years, I was like, if you know, we got to move out of here, or I gotta go back.
Yeah, I was gonna say, like, did you?
You know?
There were those conversations.
Yeah, like this was
the right thing to do?
Yeah,
sure,
kind of thing.
And so we bought a house in Frederick, bought a half of a duplex, settled, and the next day found out we were pregnant with our first.
Whoa!
So. Yeah.
But that was the order of things. We decided that we needed to buy a house,
sure. yeah.
buy a car, and then we would have kids.
Yeah.
I just didn't know it would be that fast.
It kind of all happened
life.
In that order.
One
but
day.
He was real chill with it. He's like, it's perfect order. I'm like,
okay.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm not ready.
That's the way I think, too. Like, well, we did the thing. Check, check.
Check. Here we go.
Okay, so when did you move to Frederick? Like 90?
89.
Yeah. Was it because there's like work up here, or were you guys just like, hey, we just want to get out of Germantown?
We wanted to get out,
this place.
And it was kind of a big housing bubble. Everything was super expensive, and we looked at some condos and stuff, very small, and didn't have a yard, and we had a dog, and we wanted at least a little bit of a yard. So then we looked up here in Frederick, and honestly, we looked at this duplex, and it was like, if you like it, you have to make the offer right now. And there were multiple offers on it, and so we were lucky.
Wow.
You know, to get it.
Yeah.
Lucky to get it.
I know, then yeah. pregnant the next day.
And,
yeah.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
And there were other things with the house, too.
And not being the, you know, anyway, it was fine. And for, you know, 13 years or so, wow. we lived in that little duplex. And all three of our babies were born while we lived in that.
Yeah.
And,
wow.
Yeah, it was, I mean, it was good. So Frederick, yeah, it wasn't quite as, I mean, nowhere near as. Down here wasn't like this.
No. The parts of it didn't exist.
Yeah, I mean, right. the Hampton Inn was there, you know, but...
Interesting, okay.
But, yeah, but it did have more of that Iowa feel.
I mean, the downtown area is still kind of the same.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, there have been some changes, but it was just a quaint little
place that you could...
We love downtown
Frederick.
Yeah, and, it was really nice. Yeah.
It just felt more familiar, and people talked to each other. More.
Yeah. But when you moved up here, like, did you get involved in church?
No, not really. Okay. So we did. So it was after, you know, like I said, we found out we were pregnant the next day. And then it was this, like, we're messing around with our own souls. Fine. But now we're being trusted with another little soul.
Yep.
And I want to raise this person in a church.
Yep.
So we started attending the Church of Christ on Market Street, and
which looks like a castle.
It does.
Everybody knows the castle.
Yeah,
that's on.
That's right.
Yeah.
And that was our church home and our family then. And we had our first daughter in 1990. In 1992, we had our son, and he had a lot of health issues.
So here's what we're going to do. We're going to pause right here because there's still so much story to be told ahead. So we're going to pause this episode. We're going to make this a two-parter. And so we encourage you to come back next week when we'll put part two and kind of get to figure out like how they ended up at Collective and everything that happened to get here, which is a great story as well. So thank you guys for joining us for the Your Story Matters podcast, part one of Andy and Laura. And we look forward to you joining us again next week.